It is about Prince George's County Homicide Squad. I embedded with the squad starting in November of 2012, you know, through May, June of 2013. And I went to, like, you know, I saw more than like 25 corpses and went with these guys everywhere. You know, when they questioned witnesses, when they questioned suspects on the street as they hunted these guys down, you know, trying to find, locate them through their cell phones, in the squad room as they traded jokes. You know, I was there in the morgue. You know, I went everywhere with the unfettered access. In fact, I got a badge that let me buzz into the unit and an ID card that made me kind of a little temporary employee. And so, you know, I got in, there was one night there, the detectives left, and I was left alone in this office answering the phones. It was New Year's Eve, actually, and you walked out and you heard all the gunfire, you know, in PG County. It was like a, you know, it was like the 4th of July with real guns shooting off in the air. And so I was in there alone. It was kind of cool. What's really interesting is, like, when you're not doing it for a newspaper or a news organization, it's different. And so it's a book. And, you know, it's nonfiction. It's not called fact. It's called nonfiction, narrative nonfiction. And so it's really interesting as the more time you step away from the things. Everything in the book happened. Everything is factually accurate. Every quote was verified. I took copious notes. I wrote the notes out that night or the next day if I wasn't exhausted after spending 48 hours with them, you know. And everything happened. In fact, the main problem was in writing the book was there was too much. I had to cut out a lot of stuff that was really cool, even just in a month period. The book focuses on just February 2013, when there are 12 murders and 3 police shootings in PG County. And so the book focuses on just the month of February 2013, as these detectives are pushed the brink. I was really interested in, I've always been interested in playing with, like, people under maximum amount of stress, like how they handle situations. Ordinary people handle really intense situations. I think it's really revealing of character, and I'm really interested in character. And so when I was, my first book is about, it's just a 24-hour book. It's about the near assassination of Ronald Reagan, just 24 hours, TikTok. And I was looking for something like that here, but it's harder when you're with someone for 6 months. And so at the end of the 6 months, I didn't really have a book, and I was trying to, I'd spent all this money of my own, like trying to, you know, spend with these guys and, you know, trying to find a book out of this. And I looked back, I realized that through February, there were 12 murders, 3 police shootings, and this furious hunt from February 1st to February 28th for the killer of 17-year-old Amber Stanley, you know, an honor student destined for Harvard, probably, you know, really smart. And no one could figure out how she died. It's the red ball of red balls, red ball being high-profile murder. It was the red ball of our area for that period. And I realized that was the book, this period. And when I looked at it, I recognized that it had some echoes from previous periods that the detectives all talked about with reverence, like January of 2011, when they just got slammed with all these murders in the beginning of the month, you know, and like they had 12 murders in 11 days or 13 murders in 12 days or something really intense. And they felt like the future of the county was at stake. And so I wanted to trail them and find a period like that. Maybe it was a weekend, maybe it was a week. And I looked back at it, I realized it was just that month. And then Billy Rail, a lieutenant in the squad in December of 2012, before all the stuff in the book happens, we were talking and it was kind of slow. You know, they'd had historic lows in homicides. I said, Billy, what's going on? I don't get this. He goes, Dell, December, it's going to be kind of slow. January, it's going to pick up. But February, watch out. February is going to be a good month for murder. I kept that in the back of my head. And then I recognized that I had witnessed this month. And so I wrote a ton. I wrote like, you know, 120,000 words and then jettisoned 40,000 words, which is kind of a shame, as you know. You put a lot of work into something, it's gone. So, and then as you write it, you recognize, I was talking earlier about like, it's nonfiction, so everything is true, but it's through my lens. And like, the more distance you have, the better you see things sometimes. It's interesting. Like, oh, this actually meant this. At the time, you're so in it. Like, it was so intense, man. Like, I ruined a pair of boots in a puddle of blood. I slipped on brain matter. I was in the morgue looking over corpses. I worked with these guys for 48 straight hours. I fell asleep pumping gas. I fell asleep at a red light. You know, like, it was exhausting, fatiguing. I really felt like I understood what they went through in doing it. And, you know, in the end, you know, the result is this kind of book that examines what it's like to be a police officer today in one of the most demanding assignments in policing. Right now, we're having this massive national debate about policing and tactics and community relations and solving crimes and murder spikes and all these things. And I think that it's helpful now to go back and say, how is the job really done? and how is it done well and how is it done poorly? And this is the unvarnished look at the people who speak for the dead.
Were there any rules? Were there any promises and any agreements?
That's a really good question. Yes, I actually came up with it. I crafted an agreement modeled after the one David Simon used with, you know, when he went with the Baltimore Police, and mostly for my own, so I didn't worry about getting anyone hurt by making a mistake. And so I allowed a PG police official to review the book, to raise objections only. I kept ultimate authority, raise objections only about whether there's anything in the book that might endanger a witness or a prosecution. I allowed some of the detectives to read portions of it. You know, I just, as you read the book, so you know that there's some intimate things in there. Mm-hmm. And I was very unvarnished about it. I told them from the beginning, warts and all, and I didn't hold back on anything, I don't believe. And the only thing one detective was upset about was I screwed up his eye color. I said he had hazel eyes, but he really had blue eyes, or vice versa. And so I think that also when you're with them for so long, they kind of forget you're there. And so, and also, you know this too, like if you're a straight up reporter and you're writing something and you just want it to be true, like I wanted it to be true, first of all, like there's truth and fact. It had to be factual, obviously. I don't make stuff up, but it had to be true, like ring true to everybody. And when you're writing something that global for an audience that includes people in Dubuque, Iowa, I'd want to read this book. A lot of the stuff that they would worry about being in the book is not going to make the book anyway. And you know that too from your reporting. So you embed, oh my gosh, don't put that in there. You know, my cousin would, whatever. You're like, that's not, I'm sorry. That's not going to interest my readers. And so at the end of the day, a lot of the stuff that they would be nervous about wouldn't make it anyway.